Chapter 44. How a hen takes to stratagem. The days passed, and Mr. Tulliver showed, at least to the eyes of the medical man, stronger and stronger symptoms of a gradual return to his normal condition. The paralytic obstruction was, little by little, losing its tenacity, and the mind was rising from under it with fitful struggles, like a living creature making its way from under a great snowdrift, that slides and slides again, and shuts up the newly made opening. Time would have seemed to creep to the watchers by the bed, if it had only been measured by the doubtful, distant hope which kept count of the moments within the chamber. But it was measured for them by a fast approaching dread which made the nights come too quickly. While Mr. Tulliver was slowly becoming himself again, his lot was hastening toward its moment of most palpable change. The taxing masters had done their work like an irrespectable gunsmith conscientiously preparing the musket that, duly pointed by a brave arm, will spoil a life or two. Allocators, filing of bills in chancery, decrees of sale, are legal chain shot or bomb shells that can never hit a solitary mark, but must fall with widespread shattering. So deeply inherent is it in this life of ours that men have to suffer for each other's sins, so inevitably diffusive is human suffering, that even justice makes its victims, and we can conceive no retribution that does not spread beyond its mark in pulsations of unmerited pain. By the beginning of the second week in January, the bills were out advertising the sale, under a decree of chancery, of Mr. Tulliver's farming and other stock, to be followed by a sale of the mill and land, held in the proper after-dinner hour at the Golden Lion. The miller himself, unaware of the lapse of time, fancied himself still in that first stage of his misfortunes, when expedients might be thought of, and often in his conscious hours talked in a feeble, disjointed manner of plans he would carry out when he ought well. The wife and children were not without hope of an issue that would at least save Mr. Tulliver from leaving the old spot and seeking an entirely strange life. For Uncle Dean had been induced to interest himself in this stage of the business. It would not, he acknowledged, be a bad speculation for Guest and Company to buy Dorlcote Mill and carry on the business, which was a good one, and might be increased by the addition of steam power, in which case Tulliver might be retained as manager. Still, Mr. Dean would say nothing decided about the matter. The fact that Whackham held the mortgage on the land might put it into his head to bid for the whole estate, and further, to outbid the cautious firm of Guest and Company, who did not carry on business on sentimental grounds. Mr. Dean was obliged to tell Mrs. Tulliver something to that effect when he rode over to the mill to inspect the books in company with Mrs. Glegg, for as he had observed that if Guest and Company would only think about it, Mr. Tulliver's father and grandfather had been carrying on Dorlcote Mill long before the oil mill of that firm had been so much as thought of. Mr. Dean, in reply, doubted whether that was precisely the relation between the two mills which would determine their value as investments. As for Uncle Glegg, the thing lay quite beyond his imagination. The good-natured man felt sincere pity for the Tulliver family, but his money was all locked up in excellent mortgages, and he could run no risk that would be unfair to his own relatives. But he had made up his mind that Tulliver should have some new flannel waistcoats which he had himself renounced in favor of a more elastic commodity, and that he would buy Mrs. Tulliver a pound of tea now and then. It would be a journey which his benevolence delighted in beforehand, to carry the tea and see her pleasure on being assured it was the best black. Still, it was clear that Mr. Dean was kindly disposed toward the Tullivers. One day he had brought Lucy, who was come home for the Christmas holidays, and the little blonde angel head had pressed itself against Maggie's darker cheek with many kisses and some tears. These fair slim daughters keep up a tender spot in the heart of many a respectable partner in a respectable firm, and perhaps Lucy's anxious, pitying questions about her poor cousins helped to make Uncle Dean more prompt in finding Tom a temporary place in the warehouse, and in putting him in the way of getting evening lessons in bookkeeping and calculation. that might have cheered the lad, and fed his oats a little, if there had not come at the same time the much dreaded blow of finding that his father must be a bankrupt after all. At least, the creditors must be asked to take less than their due, which to Tom's untechnical mind was the same thing as bankruptcy. His father must not only be said to have lost his property, but to have availed, the word that carried the worst obloquy to Tom's mind. For when the defendant's claim for costs had been satisfied, there would remain the friendly bill of Mr. Gore, and the deficiency at the bank, as well as the other debts which would make the assets shrink into unequivocal disproportion. Not more than 10 or 12 shillings in the pound, predicted Mr. Dean, in a decided tone, tightening his lips. And the words fell on Tom like a scalding leakage, leaving a continual smart. He was sadly in want of something to keep up his spirits a little in the unpleasantness of his position, suddenly transported from the easy carpeted ennui of study hours at Mr. Stelling's, and the busy idleness of castle building in the Ast Hafod School, to the companionship of sacks and hides, and bawling men thundering down heavy weights at his elbow. The first step toward getting on in the world was a chill, moldy, noisy affair, and implied going without one's tea in order to stay in St. Ogg's, and have an evening lesson from a one-armed elderly clerk, in a room smelling strongly of bad tobacco. Tom's young pink and white face had its colors very much deadened by the time he took off his hat at home, and sat down with keen hunger to his supper. No wonder he was a little cross, if his mother or Maggie spoke to him. But all this, while Mrs. Tulliver was brooding over a scheme by which she, and no one else, would avert the result most to be dreaded, and prevent Whackham from entertaining the purpose of bidding for the mill. Imagine a truly respectable and amiable hen, by some portentous anomaly, taking to reflection and inventing combinations by which she might prevail on Hodge not to wring her neck, or send her and her chicks to market. The result could hardly be other than much cackling and fluttering. Mrs. Tulliver, seeing that everything had gone wrong, had begun to think as he had been too passive in life, and that, if she had applied her mind to business, and taken a strong resolution now and then, it would have been all the better for her and her family. Nobody, it appeared, had thought of going to speak to Whackham on this business of the mill, and yet, Mrs. Tulliver reflected, it would have been quite the shortest method of securing the right end. It would have been of no use, to be sure, for Mr. Tulliver to go, even if he had been able and willing, for he had been owing to law against Whackham and abusing him for the last 10 years. Whackham was always likely to have a spite against him. And now that Mrs. Tulliver had come to the conclusion that her husband, and was very much in the wrong, to bring her into this trouble, she was inclined to think that his opinion of Whackham was wrong too. To be sure, Whackham had put the Baileys in the house, and sold them up, but she supposed he did that to please the man that lent Mr. Tulliver the money, for a lawyer had more folks to please than one, and he wasn't likely to put Mr. Tulliver, who had gone to law with him, above everybody else in the world. The attorney might be a very reasonable man. Why not? He had married a Miss Clint, and at the time Mrs. Tulliver had heard of that marriage, the summer when she wore her blue satin spencer, and had not yet any thoughts of Mr. Tulliver, she knew no harm of Whackham. And certainly toward herself, whom he knew to have been a Miss Dodson, it was out of all possibility that he could entertain anything but goodwill, when it was once brought home to his observation that she, for her part, had never wanted to go to law, and indeed was at present disposed to take Mr. Whackham's view of all subjects, rather than her husband's. In fact, if that attorney saw a respectable matron like herself disposed, oh, give him good words, why shouldn't he listen to her representations? For she would put the matter clearly before him, which had never been done yet. And he would never go and bid for the mill on purpose to spite her, an innocent woman, who thought it likely enough that as he had danced with him in their youth at Squire Darley's, for at those big dances as he had often and often danced with young men whose names she had forgotten. Mrs. Tulliver hid these reasonings in her own bosom, for when as he had thrown out a hint to Mr. Dean and Mr. Glegg that she wouldn't mind going to speak to Wackham herself, they had said, no, 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 and pooh, pooh, and at Wackham alone, in the tone of men who were not likely to give a candid attention to a more definite exposition of her project. Still less dared she mention the plan to Tom and Maggie, for the children were always so against everything their mother said. And Tom, she observed, was almost as much set against Wackham as his father was. But this unusual concentration of thought naturally gave Mrs. Tulliver an unusual power of device and determination. And a day or two before the sale, to be held at the Golden Lion, when there was no longer any time to be lost, she carried out her plan by a stratagem. There were pickles in question, a large stock of pickles and ketchup which Mrs. Tulliver possessed, and which Mr. Hindmarsh, the grocer, would certainly purchase, if she could transact the business in a personal interview. So she would walk with Tom to St. Ogg's that morning, and when Tom urged that she might let the pickles be at present, he didn't like her to go about just yet. She appeared so hurt at this conduct in her son, contradicting her about pickles which as he had made after the family receipts inherited from his own grandmother, who had died when his mother was a little girl, that he gave way, and they walked together until she turned toward Danish Street, where Mr. Hindmarsh retailed his grocery, not far from the offices of Mr. Wackham. That gentleman was not yet come to his office. Would Mrs. Tulliver sit down by the fire in his private room and wait for him? As he had not long to wait before the punctual attorney entered, knitting his brow with an examining glance at the stout blonde woman who rose, curtsying deferentially, a tallish man, with an aquiline nose and abundant iron gray hair. You have never seen Mr. Wackham before, and are possibly wondering whether he was really as eminent a rascal, and as crafty, bitter an enemy of honest humanity in general, and of Mr. Tulliver in particular, as he is represented to be in that Edelonger portrait of him which we have seen to exist in the miller's mind. It is clear that the irascible miller was a man to interpret any chance shot that grazed him as an attempt on his own life, and was liable to entanglements in this puzzling world, which, due consideration had to his own infallibility, required the hypothesis of a very active diabolical agency to explain them. It is still possible to believe that the attorney was not more guilty toward him than an ingenious machine, which performs its work with much regularity, is guilty toward the rash man who, venturing too near it, is caught up by some flywheel or other, and suddenly converted into unexpected mincemeat. But it is really impossible to decide this question by a glance at his person. The lines and lights of the human countenance are like other symbols, not always easy to read without a key. On an a priori view of Wackham's aquiline nose, which offended Mr. Tulliver, there was not more rascality than in the shape of his stiff shirt collar, though this too, along with his nose, might have become fraught with damnatory meaning when once the rascality was ascertained. Mrs. Tulliver, I think? Said Mr. Wackham. Yes, sir, Miss Elizabeth Dodson as was. Pray be seated. You have some business with me? Well, sir, yes, said Mrs. Tulliver, beginning to feel alarmed at her own courage. Now she was really in presence of the formidable man, and reflecting that as he had not settled with herself how she should begin. Mr. Wackham felt in his waistcoat pockets, and looked at her in silence. I hope, sir, she began at last, hope, sir, you're not a-thinking as I bear you any ill will, because oh my husband's losing his lawsuit, and the bailies being put in, and the linen being sold, oh dear. For I wasn't brought up in that way. I'm sure you remember my father, sir, for he was close friends with Squire Darley, and we allays went to the dances there, the Miss Dodsons. Nobody could be more looked on, and justly, for there was four of us, and you're quite aware as Mrs. Glegg and Mrs. Dean are my sisters. And as for going to law and losing money, and having sales before you're dead, I never saw anything o' that, before I was married, nor for a long while after. and I'm not to be answerable for my bad luck. I marrying out of my own family into one, where the goings on was different. And as for being drawn in to abuse you as other folks abuse you, sir, that I never was, and nobody can say it of me. Mrs. Tulliver shook her head a little, and looked at the hem of her pocket handkerchief. I've no doubt of what you say, Mrs. Tulliver, said Mr. Wackham, with cold politeness. Be but you have some question to ask me? Well, sir, yes. But that's what I've said to myself. I've said you'd had some natural feeling, and as for my husband, as hasn't been himself for this 2 months, I'm not a defending him, in no way, for being so odd about TH irrigation. Not but what there's worse men, for he never wronged nobody of a shilling nor a penny, not willingly. And as for his fieriness and lawing, what could I do? And him struck, as if it was with death, when he got the letter as said you to hold you o' the land. But I can't believe, but what you'll behave as a gentleman. What does all this mean, Mrs. Tulliver? Said Mr. Wackham rather sharply. What do you want to ask me? Why, sir, if you will be so good, said Mrs. Tulliver, starting a little, and speaking more hurriedly, if you will be so good, not to buy the mill and the land wouldn't so much matter, only my husband'll be like mad at your having it. Something like a new thought flashed across Mr. Wackham's face as he said, who told you I meant to buy it? Why, sir, it's none of my inventing, and I should never ha' thought of it. For my husband, as ought to know about the law, he always used to say as lawyers had never no call to buy anything, either lands or houses, for they always got 'em into their hands other ways. And I should think that 'ud be the way with you, sir, and I never said as you'd be the man to do contrary to that. Ah, well, who was it that did say so? Said Wackham, opening his desk, and moving things about, with the accompaniment of an almost inaudible whistle. Why, sir, it was Mr. Glegg and Mr. Dean, as have all the management, and Mr. Dean thinks as guest and company 'ud buy the mill, and let Mr. Tulliver work it for 'em, if you didn't bid for it and raise the price. And it 'ud be such a thing for my husband, to stay where he is, if he could get his living. For it was his father's before him, the mill was, and his grandfather built it, though I wasn't fond o' the noise of it, when first I was married, for there was no mills in our family, not the Dodsons, and if I'd known as the mills had so much to do with the law, it wouldn't have been me as 'ud have been the first Dodson to marry one. But I went into it blindfold, that I did, irrigation and everything. What? Guest and company would keep the mill in their own hands, I suppose, and pay your husband wages? Oh dear, sir, it's hard to think of, said poor Mrs. Tulliver, a little tear making its way, as my husband should take wage. But it 'ud look more like what used to be, to stay at the mill than to go anywhere else. And if you'll only think, if you was to bid for the mill and buy it, my husband might be struck worse than he was before, and never get better again as he's getting now. Well, but if I bought the mill, and allowed your husband to act as my manager in the same way, how then? Said Mr. Wackham. Oh, sir, I doubt he could never be got to do it, not if the very mill stood still, to beg and pray of him. For your name's like poison to him, it's so as never was, and he looks upon it as you've been the ruin of him all along, ever since you set the law on him about the road through the meadow, that's 8 years ago, and he's been going on ever since as I've always told him he was wrong. He's a pig-headed, foul-mouthed fool, burst out Mr. Wackham, forgetting himself. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.